Some of the most delightful content on Hacker News surfaces on weekends, when the algorithmic and business stories share space with pure intellectual curiosity. Today has several pieces in that vein. The Favicon website storage post from Tim Worrell is a masterclass in creative constraint satisfaction. The basic idea, browser favicons are typically tiny icon files, but there's nothing technically preventing you from using a favicon to store arbitrary data if you're willing to be creative about encoding. Worrell managed to encode an entire working website into a favicon file.
The comments are split between people who find this delightful as a technical party trick and people who are immediately thinking about security implications. Because if you can store a website in a favicon, you can presumably store other things in a favicon, including things that security tools might not think to scan. That's the dual-use nature of this kind of creative hacking. It's inherently both charming and slightly alarming, and the HN community is doing a good job holding both reactions simultaneously.
The Colors piece by Ryan Moulton is addressing something I find genuinely mind-expanding. Your monitor, even a very good wide-gamut display, can only render colors within a specific triangle of the visible color spectrum defined by its red, green, and blue primaries. There are colors that human eyes can perceive that no current display technology can reproduce. These aren't imaginary colors or theoretical constructs. They're colors you can actually experience, just not by looking at a screen. The post explains how to access some of these colors through specific optical techniques, including some that sound almost hallucinatory, exploiting the opponent color processing in your visual system to generate perceptions that sit outside the normal gamut.
The Can You See Three Trees post connects to this perceptual territory as well. It's an optical illusion involving stereoscopic vision, using the kind of cross-eyed or divergent viewing technique that was popular with magic eye images in the 1990s to generate depth perception where it doesn't physically exist. What the comments reveal is that there's a meaningful fraction of the population that simply cannot do this. Stereoscopic fusion requires specific neurological wiring, and some people lack it or have it in a degraded form. The discussion became an impromptu survey of people's stereoscopic abilities, with some users describing what it's actually like to lack normal depth perception.
The English vocabulary quiz, How many of the 170,000 English words do you know? Generated 483 comments, which is genuinely extraordinary for what is essentially an interactive quiz. The methodology is clever. It samples words across frequency bands and uses your hit rate on each band to estimate your total vocabulary. The HN community immediately started discussing the statistical validity of the sampling approach, how to handle domain-specific vocabulary that experts know but non-experts don't, and whether native speaker advantage is being properly controlled for. Someone pointed out that the estimate you get is extremely sensitive to how you handle obscure technical vocabulary in your area of expertise.
The Age of Empires 2 Perceptron post is the kind of thing that I suspect will be shared widely because it sits at the intersection of two communities, machine learning people and game modding people, who don't always overlap. The author built a functional perceptron using the game's trigger and scripting system, essentially treating Age of Empires 2 as a computing substrate. It's the logical extension of the everything is Turing complete observation into practice. The data compression piece from 2012 that Matt Mahoney wrote is resurfacing, and it's an excellent technical document, comprehensive, well-organized, and aging gracefully because the mathematical foundations of compression don't change. Several commenters noted that it remains one of the better introductions to information theoretic compression concepts available.
The 1969 camera operators' strike and the upstairs-downstairs multiverse is a wonderful piece of media archaeology. During the strike, some productions couldn't use union camera operators, which forced creative constraints that ended up influencing the aesthetics of certain shows in ways that propagated forward. The post traces how those constraints accidentally created diverging continuities within a television franchise. A real-world multiverse generated by labor action. It's the kind of story that rewards the specific audience combination of television history enthusiasts and people who think about how constraints drive creativity, which is a substantial fraction of HN.
And Bobby Prince. The composer who wrote the music for Doom, Wolfenstein 3D, and Duke Nukem 3D passed away recently, and the HN tribute thread reflects just how formative that music was for the generation that built much of today's technology. The E1M1 theme from Doom is probably more technically adjacent than any other piece of game music. It became the soundtrack of late-night programming sessions for an entire cohort of developers in the early 1990s. Several commenters shared specific memories tied to those tracks. Prince was working within enormous technical constraints, MIDI output through PC sound cards that varied wildly in quality, and he produced music that has a genuine emotional signature 30 years later.